Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Let's get started. Hoping to do some of the halacha as well today, so not just inside the Gemara. See how it comes out lahalacha, or at the very least how it's brought down in halacha. Let's take a look. So, from what I understand, you're up to Itmar, about 10 lines up. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. The Gemara often does this, where it brings two opinions, and it doesn't necessarily state which one was of which opinion. And it brings the argument as follows. Chad Amar, one of them said, Arava Yisod Nevi'im. One of them says that the mitzvah of Arava, Hoshana Rabba, which you guys should know a lot more about than me, because you've been learning about it, but we'll get there. One says it's a Yisod Nevi'im, the Chad Amar Arava Minhag Nevi'im. The other says it's a Minhag Nevi'im. Anybody have an idea what the difference between a Yisod and a Minhag is? No, you don't have an idea? Let's have some guesses. Which one sounds stronger to you?
Yesod,
right? Exactly. It's rooted, it's based, so it was established by the Nevi'im, and it was sort of, some people say it was the Takana, that's the language of some of the Mefarshim here, right? Rashi. Takana Nevi'im Achronim, Chagai Zechariah Malachi, Shehayum Mitaknei Takanot Yisrael, Ban Sheikh Masad Avdala. Rashi says that's what it means. Yesod Nevi'im is that they established it. Chagai Zechariah Malachi, our last prophets, they said, this is what you got to do. Others said, no, Minhag Nevi'im, which minhag is hinhigu etam velo tiknu lahem. They told the people, you know, oh, this is a good thing to do, but it wasn't like a formal establishment. Okay, so this is the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. So who said what? Says the Gemara, tistayim, we can conclude to Rabbi Yochanan hu da'amar yesod nevi'im. That Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said yesod nevi'im, and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi was the one who said it was minhag nevi'im. How do we know that? Da'amar bevo amar Rabbi Yochanan aravi yesod nevi'im, who, because we have a separate Memra, meaning Rabbi Avo tells us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that Rabbi Yochanan said, Arava is Yesod Nevi'im. So obviously, if we're going to choose how to match up, we're going to match up Rabbi Yochanan, who was said over by Rabbi Avo, with the opinion that we know may already be his, and therefore says the Gemara Tzistayim, yes, that's the case. So basically, we have a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Yochanan says it was Yesod Nevi'im, it was established formally. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, no, it was just a minhag Nevi'im, a custom that people had in those days, a good custom, and an important custom, but nevertheless, that's all it was. Okay.
Is the ultimate issue whether you make a bracha or not?
It is. Yes. The ultimate issue will be whether you make a bracha or not. Yes. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar le Rab Zeira le Rabbi Avo. Rab Zeira was not happy with what Rab Avo said. As you'll remember, Rab Avo just said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that it's a Yesod Nevi'im. Again, it was established by Chagai Zechariah and Malachi. Asks Rab Zeira to Rabbi Avo, "Mi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi? Did Rabbi Yochanan really say that?" He challenges him. "V'Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Nechunya Ish Bekaas Beis Chortan." Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Nechunya, the man of the valley or the plains of Beis Chortan, "Eser Netios Arava Venisuch Amayim Halach Alamosh Misina." So there are three cases, including this case, which are Halach Alamosh Misina. What are they? Well, you guys should have learned about them earlier on Lamed Dalet, but we'll go back through them, as I see Rashi here from Lamed Dalet, or I think that's where it's from. I didn't look it up there. I just see the Likutei Rashi on the side of some Gemaras give you a collection of Rashis from all around Shas that appear on the same words. It's very useful in the computer age. So that way you never need to actually do any amelus. You never need to actually, you know, work your way, look something up. No, you just all have it all here, which is very nice for someone preparing this. So Rashi notes, Elu Shlosha Nishal Beveis HaMedrash, Minayin Lahem in HaTorah. Basically, all these cases were Halach Lamosh Misina. What are they? So the Eser Netios is a case related to the laws of Shemitah. If you have 10 plantings that are spread out in one area, and again, there's certain distances between them. There's a whole detailed case there. But anyways, in that case,
discuss it yesterday.
Yep. Oh, okay, beautiful. Then we don't need to discuss it further, or would you like to discuss it further? No, okay. So, Eser Netios is one case. Second case, Arava, which is what we're talking about here. And three, Nisuch HaMayim. Okay, did I jump up here? No, it's just repeated over here. Beautiful, right, okay. Because I see it's quoted twice on the Amud. That's why you guys would have learned about it yesterday. Okay, there we go. So, ask the Gemara, could he really have said that, as we learned earlier? Okay, there we go. It's not just from earlier. You learned all about it yesterday. So, in these three cases, our Halach Lamosh Misinai, says the Gemara, Eshtomim Kechad Ashar, quotes a pasuk, which basically means he was quiet for a minute. Meaning, Rabbi Avohu realized that obviously there's a contradiction here. If we know that Rabbi Yochanan holds that it's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, it cannot be a Yesod Nevi'im. If it's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, that's much earlier, that's much more significant. So how could Rabbi Avohu say that it in fact was established by Chagai Zechariah and Malachi if it was really something that came from Moshe at Har Sinai? Says the Gemara, after he was quiet for this little bit, V'amar shachkum v'chazru v'yastim. This is something which comes up in a few places in Chas, to say there were certain things, as Rashi notes here, Bigalus Bavel shachu es ha-Torah v'amitzvos v'mikzas v'zon shkecha legamrei. There were some things that in Galus Bavel, you know, people weren't doing that great in terms of mitzvah and Torah observance. There were some things that were actually forgotten, and Chagai Zechariah and Malachi re-established. Not established for the first time, but re-established. This, says the Gemara, is one of those things that were forgotten and re-established. So therefore, it's not a contradiction to say that it was both halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai and established by the Nevi'im, because that was really bringing back, you know, what was before.
Can I just have a question, just to have a clarity? I'm still not 100% clear on this, but the difference between halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai and Torah b'Shebaal Peh. Like, is there a subtle difference of what we would call Torah b'Shebaal Peh and halacha l'moshe?
So Torah Shebaal Peh is not usually used as a halachic category. I would say that the difference between them, as far as we're concerned, for now, is that when we want to say the roots of something, we won't say the roots of something are in Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is a much broader term that really encompasses any sort of oral laws, not just halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, but also things sometimes that come up with drashos and things that are in the Gemara altogether. Halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai is a particular halachic category, which says, this has this and this status. What is the status of halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai? That's debated exactly in different places. But the point is, we would never call something a Torah Shebaal Peh halacha, we would only call it a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai halacha. That's just sort of the terminology that we tend to use when defining the basis for a halacha. Whereas again, the oral Torah is sort of a larger corpus, almost, if we could call it that. Certainly, they're intertwined. Halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai is certainly part of the oral Torah, and in fact, it's a great part of the oral Torah. But it's not, the oral Torah is not what we would call a halachic category.
Did you say vice versa too?
No, I'm just saying it simply based on its usage. The fact is, the Gemara will never say Zehu Torah Shebaal Peh. The Gemara will just say this is halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. That's the halachic category which we're dealing with.
Rav Akron can give the example of Masechta Megillah.
Yes,
he doesn't.
That's what I was thinking of when I said that.
Right, he doesn't think that Moshe gave that over. He may have had some idea that, you know, Purim was going to happen, but the specifics are in the Megillah, not in the Megillah, in the Masechta Megillah. The discussions, which may not have been from Moshe himself.
In terms of halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, I'm confused.
Not in terms of halacha,
right?
In terms of
Masorah. That's in terms of, right? But that's not. I mean, I fail to see where that comes up here. That's what Torah Shebaal Peh is. I mean, what was Rick Rockman trying to illustrate?
It is to add on to what you said is that the oral tradition encompasses everything.
Yes.
Halacha
okay.
Moshe mi-Sinai.
Yes.
Is specific to
things that were explicitly stated.
To Moshe, as
okay,
opposed
now I understand.
To the entire body of oral tradition.
Well, we wouldn't talk about Megillah, because the Megillah, let's say Megillah Esther, that came afterwards. So
that's what Rabbi Korakin was emphasizing, to say that even that might be considered, even that might be and is considered part of the oral Torah, but it's not halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. Moshe did not stand there at Sinai and hear from Hashem, you should read the Megillah on the 14th of Adar. That's what he's writing. Okay, there we had it. Okay, there's a very weird line in the Gemara. The Gemara asks the following question. We am Rabbi Yochanan hachi. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say this? V'am Rabbi Yochanan, dilchon amri dilchon hi. Okay? It's hard exactly how to parse it. The simplest and shortest way to say it is if you can squint your eyes really closely at Rabbeinu Chananel here. Rabbeinu Chananel says, Kloma Rav Kahana hachacham shelachem shehu bavli. He says, meaning, Rav Kahana, so Rabbi Yochanan said to the people of Eretz Yisrael, okay? Rav Kahana, who was your Chacham, okay, and he ran to Eretz Yisrael, to Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Kahana, who came to Eretz Yisrael, as Rashi explains, but was actually from Babel. Okay? He himself said, Dilhonhi, Pirish hachacham shelachem amarli. If you look in Rabbi Nachman, Ki arava midrabananhi, ve'ina lo yesod nevi'im velo halacha. The point is to say that it's yours, meaning that he said that it's not a yesod nevi'im, it's not halacha l'moshe mi'sinai, it's something that you guys, so to say, established. Okay, maybe it's, again, a minhag of sorts. So that's what's going on here. Basically, we have another question, we have another source from Yochanan saying that these type of things were not actually from earlier, but these were Bavel-type minhagim and Bavel-type things, meaning things that came after the Beit HaMikdash. That's what it seems to be saying. Okay, right? Okay. So, therefore, says the Gemara Lo Kasha, if we have this last stira to say that one sounds like it is and one sounds like it isn't, Kan b'mikdash, kan b'gvulin, there's a very easy answer. As Rashi says, Kan b'mikdash, halacha l'moshe mi'sinai, that which we did in the Beis HaMikdash was halacha l'moshe mi'sinai, kan b'gvulin. However, in the rest of the Jewish places of residence, it was only simply a yesod nevi'im or lighter. Okay? Amrami, Rami says, Arava tzricha shir. Ravami says that this Arava actually needs a shir, an amount. Ve'ena nitelas ala b'fnei atzman, it's only taken by itself. Ve'ena adam yotzei dechavaso ba'arava sheva lulav, and a person cannot use the Aravos that are in their lulav for this purpose. Meaning it's an additional mitzvah of Arava, not just what you've been taking in your lulav. Kevan shamamar, ena nitelas ala b'fnei atzma pshita ve'ena adam yotzei ba'arava sheva lulav. Asks the Gemara, why are you telling me both of these things? Meaning to tell me that you're not Yotze with Arava and Lulav is one. To tell me that it has to be taken by itself seems to be the same halacha. So why are you telling me both? Asks the Gemara. Ma'u detema hani mili hecha delo agbehe v'hadar agbehe aval agbehe v'hadar agbehe malo kamash malan. Says the Gemara. It's very straightforward. One might have thought, here's what I'm going to do. Meaning, it says that the Arava needs to be taken on its own. So here's what I do. I take up my Lulav, check my Lulav that morning. I take out the Arava and lift it again. So had I just told you it needs to be lifted twice, then I would think you could do that. So the second halacha of you can't use the one in your lulav comes to tell you that halacha. That's why they are not synonymous. One comes to tell you the second halacha, and one comes to tell you the first halacha. That's what the Gemara says. V'rav Chisda, Rav Yitzchak, Adam Yotze Yidei Chovaso Barava Sheva Lulav, and in some versions, B'yom Tavrishin Shachag. And Rav Chisda, in the name of Rav Yitzchak, says, no, a person does is Yotze with the Arava that was in their Lulav. Okay? This is basically where we get up to. Okay, now, a new start, the Kama Shiura, and how long, how big does it have to be if we're taking this Arava by itself? Amar Rav Nachman, Gimel Badei Alin Lachen. It has to be three, basically, three sets of leaves coming off. Okay? It has to be three badan of aravos, sheish b'kol echad alin lachen, meaning three aravos which have leaves coming off them which are wet, meaning nice, ripe aravos. Rav Sheshe Zamar, no, afilu ala echad uvad echad, even if there's just one leaf and one sort of branch, okay? The bud is the branch, the alim are the leaves that come off it, meaning if you stripped off all the leaves, you'd be left with a bud. Okay, that's what a bud and an ala echad. So, says the Gemara, Ala echad ubad echad selka daitach. Does that really make sense? That you could have just one empty arava branch and one leaf on the side, and that's what we're talking about? Why does it say Ala echad ubad echad means one leaf and one branch? That's what it means. So ask the Gemara, do you really think that that's the case? Answers the Gemara, no. Ela ima afilu ala echad bivad echad. Not ve with a vav, but be with a beis. Even if it's just one leaf that's on one branch. Meaning, even if you were to have an arava branch that's so beaten up, it only has one leaf remaining on it, that is enough for the mitzvah of arava. Okay? The question is how much you want to continue at before we go through the halachos. I'm happy to continue. I prepared a lot more than this, so we can continue. Or we can go to the jump to the halacha now, whatever you like. Because I know you guys have a halachic focus. So
let's continue, and then we'll leave time for the halacha.
Okay. So let's. Okay.
No, you prepared for it, so.
Well, I prepared the halacha too.
No question. So you know what? Whatever works.
Okay. So, you know, let's stop here where the shear is, because that's the stuff that's paskined here. There is also about the chavat. Okay, fine. You know, let's continue a little bit more. Amar Evu. Evu said, Havaka imna kamedi Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Tzadok. I was standing in front of Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzadok. V'aisi ha'ugavra arava kamei. Somebody brought an arava to him. Shakil chavit chavit v'lo barech. So now here we get to the conclusion of the discussion between Minag Nevi'im and Yesod Nevi'im. And he says that he took, Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzadok took the arava, and Rashi says, chavit chavit, which even though we think of chavat as hitting it on the ground, as we're going to see in Halacha, nevertheless, here Rashi explains it, Lashon Nanua, he waved it around, and he did not make a bracha. Why? Kasavar Minag Nevi'im hu. Because he understood that this was a Minag Nevi'im, it was only a custom, and therefore, it does not get a bracha. Aivu v'chizkia b'nei brati d'rav aisu arava l'kamei. Aivu and Chizkia, the sons of the daughters of Rav, brought an arava to him, l'kamei d'rav, in front of him. Chavit chavit v'lo barech. Kasavar minag nevi'im hu. Okay, and so too, same thing happened there. He waved it around and he did not make the bracha. He also held it as minag nevi'im. Amar evu hava ka'imna kamei d'rav alazer bar tzadok asa l'kamei hu gavra. Amar lei. So I don't even know if I... So he said to him the following, Kiryasa Isli, he says, I have cities, Karmaya Isli, I have vineyards, Zisaya Isli, I have olive trees, V'asu b'nei karaisu, mekashkishin v'karmaya, v'achlin b'zisaya. Okay, and he basically says there are people coming and doing all this stuff. Arech v'lo arech. So he says, is it good what they're doing or not? That basically what they were doing, they were not being mafkir things on Shemitah. And they were working it. So he asked him, was this appropriate or not appropriate? Amar lei, lo arech, it's not good. Okay, this really is already disconnected. Here's where I really got up to here. So you know what, let's jump to the halacha now. And maybe you can even go back on that Gemara because it's going to be leading into the next part, it looks like. But the point is to say, to summarize our findings, we just had two opinions that seemed to paskin that it was not a Yesod Nevi'im, but rather a Minag Nevi'im. Therefore, they did not make a bracha. We also learned the halachos of how it needs to be taken. So first of all, to contrast the arava in the lulav in terms of its halachos with the arava that's being taken by itself. Does anybody happen to remember the halacha for an arava in the lulav? What shear does it need to have? Do you remember this?
In terms of how many?
How many leaves? Yeah.
Three.
Well, it needs to have three leaves, okay? Interesting.
You're talking about each individual arava?
Arava, yes.
Into your lulav.
Yes, because we know that there's only one arava necessary here. However, how many aravas are necessary there? Again, more of a discussion,
five.
But...
five, no?
There are five that we take, but I'm talking about in the lulav. In the lulav.
The lulav.
What makes aravos puzzle? How do you know when it's time to replace your aravos on your lulav?
The majority... it's less than the like a
very
less
good,
than the majority.
Very good. So if you look back in Simon Tafresh Mem Zayin, which is the halachos of the arava in the lulav, arava sheyavshu rov alav o shenashru rov alin o nikdam rosha shel ha'etz psula. Okay, if you have most of them that are dried out or most of them that have fallen out, that already means your arava is no good for your lulav. Very good.
But what about is it dry? Because I thought even if they're, you know, obviously if they look like they're ready to fall off, it's a different story. But let's say they're dried out.
Yeah, there's a difference between dried out and the halacha of when something is considered dry in halacha. There's different definitions given, but I mean, if it's something that if you touch it, it'll crumble, that's considered dry. If it's something that, okay, it's not like sopping wet,
fresh. Like
yeah, if it doesn't look so fresh, I think, from what I'm aware, so again, so long as it's not crumbling, it's not considered to be, quote-unquote, dry.
As long as you have the leaves there, no?
Well, I mean, we're talking about it has to be most of the leaves are there. That's what we just said. But dry leaves are considered, in a way, as if they're not there for that halacha. Again, that's you need all those things. Now let's take a look here. I'm going to read you really all of the halachas of Hoshana Rabbah that we have here for now. Hoshana Rabbah is a very interesting day because you have not only the laws that you know used to take place in the Beit HaMikdash, or the Mitzvah Arava, and the Arava that we take to commemorate that, but you also have the other element of the fact that on Sukkot, We say b'chag nidonin al hamayim is the day that we're judged on water. And Kabbalah especially expands this concept on Hoshana Rabbah to be very, very inclusive of a lot of other Kabbalistic components, whether that be sort of the way that we act on it, which we don't see in the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't say wear a kittel and say Shabbos Pesukah d'Zimra. The Gemara doesn't talk about that stuff. We know there's Kabbalah. A lot of the details of the Arava, how many to take, five, right, which came from here before, comes from Kabbalah. So I figured I'd mention you some of the halachos of that. It's in Simon Taf Resh Samachdal, if you want to look it up, 664. I'm going to read you from Aruch HaShulchan, but you can look it up in Shulchan Aruch and Mishneh Berurah if you want to know more of the details that are relevant and that come from our Gemara. Okay, so first things first, says Aruch HaShulchan, on this day, there's an extra mitzvah, the mitzvah of Arava. And he says it was a halacha l'Moshe Misinai in the Beis HaMikdash, that you would take one arava other than the arava in the lulav. And again, you can't be yotze with the one in your lulav, he paskins. And the shear, the amount that it has to be only one leaf on one branch. Okay? And he says, what would they do? So he says, every day of the 7 days, which you should have learned in the Gemara, they would bring all these big things of aravos, and they would be 11 amos tall, and they would put them, they found them near Yerushalayim, and they would bend them over the Mizbeach. Do you remember this, Gemara?
Yeah.
Yes, okay, good. And again, they would be one amma over the Mizbeach, and when they would bring them, they would blow the shofar, and they would do kia truat kia. However, when it was Shabbos, you wouldn't do it unless it was on, which day?
Seventh.
Seventh day, which is? Hoshana Rabbah. The day that we're talking about, that was the most important. Even though, by the way, nowadays it cannot fall out on Shabbos. Nevertheless, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, yes, it could. And because they used to establish the Rosh Chodesh based on what the witness is coming forward, and they would declare the Rosh Chodesh like that, so therefore there was no way to ensure that a particular day did or didn't fall out. We wouldn't want to do that. Yes.
Every day take the same arava, or they take a new one every day?
It seems like they would bring new ones every day, and they would be similar looking. They would be very, very large, long ones. But it sounds like
almost.
Yes.
Which is what, like
22
feet or something?
Well, I mean, somewhere between, yeah, like 16-ish and 22-ish feet.
Why would it be 11? Isn't that? I thought it was 30.
No. No, it's 11. No. It's 11 amos tall, 10 amos to get up to the Mizbeach, and one amos bent over the Mizbeach. I don't know if you've seen those videos that circulate every year on... there's always some crazy guy who takes like some insanely long aravos, and it's like this hilarious thing to watch, like, trying to hit it on the ground. Certainly there are aravos of that length. That is no question. I mean, you've seen willow trees before.
Yeah.
So it's not a question. Yes?
When you say they, you're talking about the Kohanim?
It just says
it is. Yeah. No, we established that the only
the only people that are allowed there are the Kohanim.
Yeah,
right. I don't know if they were the ones that were cutting it though.
Right.
But I mean, there's no reason to assume not. But the only people that could put it up, yes, would be the Kohanim. You couldn't just walk onto the Mizbeach as a Yisrael. No, that's certainly the case.
We had two different things. One is that they just put it next to the Mizbeach, mm-hmm. and the other thing is that they went around.
Uh-huh.
The
right, and that's what we said. The Kia Truat Kia part. Yeah, that was the Kohanim. Okay.
Where does the shofar come into play here, really, with that? Because why are they blowing the shofar?
Sorry?
No, I'm just glad.
I don't know why. I didn't learn, the source for this. But again, there is some sort of...
Isn't the shofar really a specific mitzvah for Rosh Hashanah? Or is there other times of the
day? So absolutely it is not just for Rosh Hashanah. So there are two sets of times where the Torah tells us that we should be blowing things, okay? Whether shofar, chatzotzot, or trumpets. Really, right? Yom Yamim Tovim, what do we blow? Uv'yom simchatchem uv'morichem, v'ashay chachichem, utkatem b'chatzotzot, alalotichem yalzivcheshemechem. So, when they would bring the different korbanot, we say that they would blow the trumpets. However, when there was a time of need, right? Also, we talk about our Atem HaChatzotzerot, but we talk about the shofar as well.
Is different.
Yes.
What you're talking about, aren't you talking about a trumpet?
Yes, but there were times that they would blow with the korbanos, and there was trumpets, there was shofars, when exactly we do each, and why. There certainly was a blowing, and sometimes the blowing was with shofars. And again, it was almost sometimes like a cry, right? We say it's like wailing, especially when you think of it in the context of what's happening and the context of how we make Hoshana Rabbah to be like a day like that, it kind of makes sense. Again, I don't know the source of this halacha, I didn't learn it, but I have it here. Okay. Okay, V'kemetrin, and he says, by the way, the reason why they would do it on Shabbos, as you guys should have learned sometime last week, is because it's not written in the Torah, therefore it needs extra sort of emphasis, okay? And again, they would bring the Arava on Erev Shabbos to the Beis HaMikdash, and they would put it in this pitcher, which was full of water, in order that they don't get sort of dried out. And then on Shabbos, they would bend it over, and they would do what they do every day. Okay, now, he says, nowadays, Chag Hizchayan Malachi established that people should be doing this. Again, not every single day like Lulav, but only on Hoshana Rabbah, in order to remember what they did in the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, what do? You take one bar, meaning one branch, or many branches, other than the Arava and the Lulav, v'chovet ba'al hakarka o al hakli pa'mayim o shalosh. And what you do is, you bang it on the ground or on some sort of, you know, object twice, three times without a bracha, because again, it's not really, you know, sort of something so formal. And he says the best thing to do is to actually hit it five times. And there's a certain Kabbalistic thing. Okay.
Sorry to interrupt, but what's the reason? Because up until now, the ceremony is either putting it up against the Mizbeach, like it's a very passive ceremony, or walking around. So why is there this jump to beating?
So it's hard to know because I didn't look at the background of this halacha, which sometimes I do, but with the time that I had last night, I have to apologize. I didn't have the chance to look into it completely. We do see the language of hitting in this Gemara here, depending on Rashi understands it as nanua. Right. But I do wonder if that was just interpreted by others as hitting. And that's something which comes from the Gemara then. That would be my guess, but I'd have to look at the tour. And some of the other...
Because the way we do it today, right, is you take it near the end of all the...
Hoshanas, right?
Right, and hold it.
Right, and then we hit it.
And then after Kaddish, you know, you...
Right, as he's going to mention, there were people that circulated with it, and they went around for the, you know, for the Hoshanas as well, holding the Arava, but we don't do that now.
Also, I don't know if we ever got into... Was there a purpose to the Arava? I mean, it's a halacha to do it, but is there sort of a reason... why we might do
so
it.
There's a symbolism. Anybody know what the symbolism is?
Water, growth,
right, and bringing it into the Mizbeach. I think that that's the clear one to say that, in general, the stuff that we do on Sukkot is all about symbolism of bringing water. That's why we bring all these different weird things that grow on different amounts of water.
So wait, why is this significant for water versus the other, let's say, the Hadassim or the...
Where it grows.
The willows.
Well, exactly. The willows grow exactly, are specifically right. Right. But we do say that there's water symbolism to the other ones as well, which, you know, it's otherwise one of the most bizarre mitzvahs to explain to someone who is non-Jewish or something like that. You're like, what are you walking around with, like, all these weird things that you've imported from another land, and somebody's walked along a cliff in Morocco to get you this lemon thing? It is weird, but the symbolism of it is these are different things that grew in the local areas, on different amounts of water. The Aravos, though, are the ones there. Arvei Nachal, right? That's exactly what they're all about, and they've, you know, a lot of water to them. So certainly the symbolism of water is there. Again, exactly why we do each part of it, I'm sure there are explanations. I don't know, you know, each and every detail
and
of it.
The truck is the opposite, the little, just a little.
Correct, because it needs the least amount of water. And that's why we take this range on Sukkot. It's supposed to be ranging from something, Shegdelin al Kol Mayim, right? And, you know, all the way through to things that need a lot of water to grow. Okay. So, says the Aruch HaShulchan, again, he adds, this is now in Gimel, he says that, again, as we said, all it needs is one leaf on one, what do I keep on forgetting the word, one branch. There we go. He says, however, mihu michuar hula says Cain. He says that, you don't do that. You don't bring your Arava with one leaf to do, come on, show some respect. Right? He says, what should you do? You should take a nice one. There's a mitzvah, zek helivyan veyu, right? We say that the concept of hiddur mitzvah comes from the pasuk zek helivyan veyu, that again, you should do your mitzvahs nicely. And therefore he says, people take five, they tie them together. Again, it's also a Kabbalistic practice. And its length should be the length of the Arav and the Lulav. And we have the practice, he says, that anything that passels the Arav and the Lulav is considered inappropriate to be taken here. It's true that you can be Yotze the mitzvah, but nevertheless, he says, our practice is to follow the chumros of the Arava found in the Lulav. We'll go for a couple more minutes here. I see we still have about 3-4 minutes. So he says, right, except for the losing the number of leaves. He says that would be okay, even if there's only one left, as we said. Okay, it doesn't need na'anua, he says, just chavita. You don't need to shake it around like the Lulav. You only need to hit it on the ground. V'yesh omrim, he says, and some say shetzarach gam na'anua. And some people say that you actually, they had the custom to go 1, 2, 3, right? Up, up, down, down, right, left, and all around.
Well, so, Rabbi Krokin recommended us this year to do it.
He did.
Before he said, I recommend you to shake
okay,
it.
Okay, well, there is a shita like that.
But he said that, what?
Really, Rabbi okay.
Before you beat the Arabas, you yeah. shake it like the Lulav.
Really?
In all directions, yes.
Okay, there we go. It's the Pesach of the Mar Dasra. I have not seen people doing that. Right? And in fact, you know who says this? The Rama says this. He says that they would do first. First they would wave it and then they would hit it.
Yes.
And says the Aruch HaShulchan, something like I said, Va'anachnu lo yadanu miminag zeh. Says, I've never heard of this before. He says it's nice that the Rama says it, but he says, who's ever heard of this? Clearly it was not the custom in his lands. Obviously it's a significant opinion that should not be disregarded lightly. Okay? Again, you're not supposed to carry other things with it. It's supposed to be by itself. You should hold it in your hand. You should hold it nicely. Again, lots of halachos other relating to that. He says, even though some people say that we would circle while we're holding the arava, he says we generally just do the lulav. Again, he talks about other things. Can you do the arava with the lulav together? And again, he paskins also, as we said before, and he says, as I mentioned before, that you cannot use the aravos in your lulav again a second time. Okay, again, more details. Can you take it with your lulav? Can you not take it with your lulav? We don't take it with our lulav, so that's not the case. Okay, more about this. I'm just trying to speed up here to finish. The question is, what's the status of them? Okay, have you ever wondered about what people try to throw it on the Aron HaKodesh? So the question is, what's the status of it? Is it considered a Tashmish Kedusha, or is it a Tashmish Mitzvah? He says you still shouldn't step on it and things like that. He says, so the custom was, the Rama writes, that the custom was they would hide it and keep it until they would bake matzahs in order to do a mitzvah with it. And since you've already done one mitzvah with it, so it's nice to do another mitzvah with it. Okay, and he says, however, Ach mipnei orech hazman kasheh hashmira, ולפעמים מוטלים בביזיון, ולכן יותר טוב לסורפן כמו שסורפין שכח הסוכה, וכן אנו נוהג. And he says, however, because it's such a long time till you bake matzahs, he says, generally they're stored in an inappropriate fashion for something which had a mitzvah done with it. Therefore, he says, you're better off just to burn it now like you should be, because you can burn or you can bury things like this. You shouldn't just throw them in the garbage some, matashmish mitzvah. But he says, just burn it together with the schach. That's the best way to do it. And I think we'll stop here because we're out of time. But lots of interesting things.
What do they do with them after they're on top of the Ranakodesh for a certain amount of time? Where do they take that?
Again, in theory, it's supposed to be saved for some other mitzvah that you can do with it. But in shuls, what actually tends to happen is exactly what the Aruch HaShulchan is concerned about. At some point, unless someone takes real responsibility for this, people who are not aware will go and throw them out. Right?
That's interesting.
Okay, anyways, that's the story. Shkoyach.